December 26th at 9 o'clock in the morning until January 15th, Mercury will be retrograde. This happens about three times every year. And during this time, communications, electronics, computers, your brain computer, your desktop computer, communications, everything can go awry. And the basic concept, if you want to think about Mercury retrograde, is just the prefix RE. You have to redo, rewrite, resend, recap, just remake. Anything you can put an RE in front of represents Mercury retrograde. So it means that you have to be two or three times more diligent in checking wording and meaning and making sure that, you know, the appointment time is confirmed. Every little detail, sometimes mechanical things will break down. This is not a good time to sign any kind of legal papers if you can at all possibly wait or get it done before the 26th of December or wait until January 15th. A little word to the wise there. Things that you put in the mail take forever to get there, if they get there at all. You can all go online and just look up Mercury retrograde and read in depth in case you didn't already know about it. But having, since it's coming up, I just thought I'd mention that. And also, I'm going to lead into our topic, first of all, by talking about the position of the sun right now, as well as the new moon that has just passed, is at galactic degree in Sagittarius. At this time, I would like to welcome Lavendar, our speaker for this evening, and I would like to also say personally, Lavendar, I'm so honored that you do this for us and share your wisdom and your experience that you have gathered over so many years of diligently chronicling. So would you give us just a little nutshell of what 25, 26, 27 Sag means?
Of course. Okay, thank you so much for that introduction. And what I'd like to say about first is 26 degrees of Sagittarius happens around December 17th and 18th of any given year. And, of course, on December 21st, 2012, the sun will be at 26 Sag, which we're all looking to see what's going to happen in 2012 because it's galactic center. And I noticed on a show on Sci-Fi the other night, they had a special on 2012, and they talked about 26 degrees being galactic center. And it's like, wow, I'm hearing it on television. That's really cool. So, the 25 degrees is like, it's like a train approaching, because 26 is the apex of the energy, and 27 degrees is like the train's leaving the station. But there's a three-day window where the energies will be activated in a person's chart, and so if they have a 25, 26, or 27 degree marking in Sagittarius, then it gives them pretty much a direct line to this galactic frequency. Now, the galactic frequency is used by different species, by different ships, different galactic commands use this frequency. It's like a radio frequency. So if you have it automatically in your system, of course you're going to be hearing a different drummer because at different times when ships are going around the planet and doing different things, you'll just happen to, you know, click in to maybe some strange beeping noise or a ringing in your head, or there's no telling how the communication will affect you. So, and I'd also like to say that when Mercury's retrograde, during these times, when the galactic sun is activated and Mercury goes retrograde about the same time, that the thing that I notice the most is that, especially on the telephone, if you call someone up and try to talk to them, they'll hear just the opposite of what you're saying. So sometimes you have to repeat yourself one, two, maybe three times before they can actually hear what you're saying. And more arguments seem to be happening during this period of time because people will not, they just can't hear. The lips and the ears don't match for some reason. And also notice that you lose a lot of luggage when you're flying during a Mercury retrograde time. So,
it's kind of like Murphy's Law reigns supreme.
Yes, yes.
And I would like to welcome the callers that just came on and ask you please to do star 6 so that we can keep the call quality high. Okay, you can continue. Thank you.
Okay. Also, I'd like to say that during December time, this 17th, 18th time, the PowerPoints on the planet, the different grids, crystals, there is such an activation that happens simultaneously with Galactic Center. It is really an upliftment. I took all the Giza crystals today and put them out in the sun. You know, I have like, you know, just a lot of them, and I have them in this big purple bowl, and I took them outside, and what happened was all the animals came, and sparrows and hawks and, you know, the creatures came, and when I looked out there, I thought, oh, my, and they're all just sitting around, and the cats were not chasing the birds, and I thought that was quite unusual, because it's usually their fun thing to do, not today. They were all in attendance around those crystals. I thought that was kind of interesting. So every once in a while, when I know that the sun is in galactic degree, I will take the crystals out and I will charge them up. It's like they want a little drink of water or something, you know. So I think I'm going to go right into talking about I was sent something some time ago. It's called Slavery and the Eight Veils by Don Harkins. I do not know Don Harkins. I just happen to agree with kind of the way he puts his words together describing the different levels of consciousness. And I'm sure all of you have experienced trying to tell someone something, and they'll just look at you with a very blank look, and you get very frustrated because what you're saying, if you're trying to pass them on some wisdom or some metaphysical teaching, or if you're talking about UFOs or ghosts or what, or a subject that's kind of in the other where, it's because it's not that they don't want to see it, they just simply can't see it.
Excuse me,
because
can I interject, just trying to find a place to say this? Could everybody make sure you've got yourself muted, star 6, because I'm hearing background noise. And we want to keep the call quality of the call recording as good as we can. So please make sure that you're star 6 muted. Thank you. Sorry for the interruption. Lavendar Girl.
Okay, I'm going to read exactly what Don Harkins has written. He's written it much better than I can possibly try to say it. I'll just read his document, his essay. And like I said, it has given me so much freedom in knowing how to talk to different people. And he has these different levels, 1 through 8, and I'm going to read about all 8 veils. He starts out by saying, over the last several years, I have evolved and discarded several theories in an attempt to explain why it is that most people cannot see truth, even when it smacks them in the face. Those of us who can see the conspiracy have participated in countless conversations among ourselves that address the frustration of most people's inability to comprehend the extremely well-documented arguments, which we use to describe the process of our collective enslavement and exploitation. The most common explanation to be arrived at is that most people just don't want to see what's really going on. Extremely evil men and women who make up the world's power elite have cleverly cultivated a virtual pasture so grass green that few people seldom, if ever, bother to look up from where they're grazing long enough to notice the brightly colored tags stapled to their ears. The same people who cannot see their enslavement for the pasture grass have a tendency to view as insane conspiracy theorists those of us who can see past the farm and into the parlor of their feudal lordship's castle. Finally, I understand why. It's not that those who don't see that their freedom is vanishing under the leadership of the power elite don't want to see it. They simply can't see what is happening to them because of the unpierced veils that block their view. All human endeavors are a filtration process. Sports are one of the best examples. We play specific sports until we kicked off the playground. The pro athletes we pay big bucks to watch just never got kicked off the playground. Where millions of kids play Little League each spring, they are filtered out until there are about 50 guys who go to the World Series in October. Behind the first veil, there are over 6 billion people on the planet, and most of them live and die without having seriously contemplated anything other than what it takes to keep their lives together. 90% of all humanity will live and die without having pierced the first veil. The first veil. 10% of us will pierce the first veil and find the world of politics. We'll vote, be active, and have an opinion. Our opinions are shaped by the physical world around us. We have a tendency to accept that government officials, network media personalities, and other experts are voices of authority. 90% of the people in this group will live and die without having pierced the second veil. The second veil. 10% of us will pierce the second veil to explore the world of history, the relationship between man and government, and the meaning of self-government through the Constitution and common law. 90% of the people in this group will live and die without having pierced the third veil. The third veil. 10% of us will pierce the third veil to find that the resources of the world, including people, are controlled by extremely wealthy and powerful families whose incorporated old-world assets have, with modern extortion strategies, become the foundation upon which the world's economy is currently indebted. 90% of the people in this group will live and die without having pierced the fourth veil. The fourth veil. 10% of us will pierce the fourth veil to discover the Illuminati, Freemasonry, and the other secret societies. These societies use symbols and perform ceremonies that perpetrate the generational transfers of arcane knowledge that are used to keep the ordinary people in political, economic, and spiritual bondage to the oldest bloodlines on Earth. 90% of the people in this group will live and die without having pierced the fifth veil. The fifth veil. 10% of us will pierce the fifth veil to learn that the secret societies are so far advanced with technology that time travel and interstellar communication have no boundaries, and controlling the actions of people is what their members do as offhandedly as we tell our children when they must go to bed. 90% of the people in this group will live and die without having pierced the sixth veil. The sixth veil. 10% of us will pierce the sixth veil where the dragons and lizards and aliens we thought were the fictional monsters of childhood literature are real and are the controlling forces behind the secret societies. 90% of the people in this group will live and die without piercing the seventh veil. The seventh veil. I do not know what is behind the seventh veil. I think it's where your soul has evolved to the point that you can exist on Earth and be the man Gandhi was or the woman Peace Pilgrim was, people so enlightened that they brighten the world around them no matter what. The eighth veil, ? Piercing the eighth veil probably reveals God in the pure energy that is the life force in all living things, which are, I think, one and the same. If my math is accurate, there are only about 60,000 people on the planet who have pierced the sixth veil. Now I have to divert from this because I really think that number is not correct. The irony here is too incredible. Those who are stuck behind veils 1 through 5 have little choice but to view the people who have pierced the veils beyond them as insane. With each veil pierced, exponentially shrinking numbers of increasingly enlightened people are deemed insane by increasingly masses of decreasing enlightened people. Adding to the irony, the harder a sixth or better veiler tries to explain what he's able to see to those who can't, the more insane he appears to them. Our enemy, the state. Behind the first two veils, we find the great majority of people on the planet. They are the tools of the state. The second veilers are the gullible voters whose ignorance justify the actions of politicians who send their first veilers off to die in foreign lands as cannon fodder. Their combined stations in life are to believe that the self-serving mechanisms of the power elite are matters of national security worth dying for. The third, fourth, fifth, and sixth veilers are of increasingly liability to the state because of their decreasing ability to be used as tools to consolidate power and wealth of the many into the hands of the power elite. It is common for these people to sacrifice more of their relationships with friends and family, their professional careers, and personal freedom with each veil that they pierce. Albert J. Nock, author of Enemy Our State, explained what happens to those who find the seventh and eighth veils. He says, "What was the best that the state could find to do with an actual Socrates and an actual Jesus when it had them? Merely to poison one and crucify the other? For no other reason but that they were too intolerably embarrassing to be allowed to live any longer." Conclusions. And so now we know that it's not that our countrymen are so committed to their lives that they don't want to see. The mechanisms of their enslavement and exploitation, they simply can't see. Yet as surely as I cannot see what's on the other side of a closed curtain. The purpose of this essay is threefold: to help the handful of people in the latter veils to understand why the masses have little choice but to interpret their clarity as insanity, and two, to help people behind the first two veils understanding that living, breathing, and thinking are just the beginning, and three, show people that the greatest adventure of our life is behind the next veil, because that is just one less veil between ourselves and God. Now, for anyone that wants a copy of this, you can go on Google Slavery and the Eight Veils by Don Harkins, and you can download it off the Internet. That's where I found it. So when I read this, and I took this to the level where I function, because I function in the world of ETs, the experimental stations that I've been privy to, and I have at different times tried to explain some of my adventures to certain people, and I must say there have been several that tried to kill me. and I'd have to regroup and say, oh, okay, I can't go there again. But just reading this, somehow it activated in my own system. So now when I talk to a person, I can tell by the way they talk, the way they think. I go, oh, that's a third veiler. That's a one, two, or three, or that's a five. Somehow it's helped me to distinguish who I share my information with and who I don't. Ariel, is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I just as an analogy, if you just graduated college and you're talking to another person, you look and you see that they're only 7 years old, why bother trying to explain something with words that they don't understand and thoughts that they just can't? They're just not capable. And that, I think, is the gist of what a lot of us face and what we were talking about just before when we were just chit-chatting, that sometimes your words are not falling on deaf ears and the people are not belligerent and they just can't. They're, like you said, they're not wired for it. Your brain can't process the information, and their soul on an evolutionary level, is like the grade school child. And that's not to say that someday they might evolve to, you know, the higher veil, but how does it serve us to try to inform those people of anything? And the answer is it doesn't, because we should not need to be right about our beliefs.
That's true.
We just need to live them.
By the way, I did want to announce that Jesse Ventura has a TV show that comes on every Wednesday. It's on tonight on True TV, and it's called Conspiracy Theory. The first show was about HAARP. The second show was about 9/11. And tonight is going to be about the global environment and climate change. So I'm anxious to see what he has to say on the show tonight. So since we're talking about conspiracy theories, I thought I'd mention that. I would like to open up the floor and have people to discuss how they feel about these 8 veils. If you would do *6 and unmute yourself and come online and let's discuss how you feel about the different levels of consciousness that Don Harkins has written about. Anyone?
I think he covered those topics so well.
This is Ildi. I was just thinking when you were saying trying to talk to different levels about, you know, the first time children ask where babies come from, it could be as simple as a question that has nothing to do with babies. And people who are trying to ask you for their help, it's like Lavendar said, you have to feel them out to see what they're capable of understanding.
And I've also found out that it's a violation to take someone beyond what they're capable of handling. It's really a violation.
I'm sure that we have all met people who just like to hear themselves talk, and they like to be in the position of, I know more than you do, and now I'm going to drop it on you. And it's more of an ego thing than a true desire to help someone. And as you said, it's a violation. If someone did not ask for your help, you can't just walk up to someone and just start telling them things that you know that's just not even in their consciousness. It serves no purpose. Except to have people come running after you.
Right. I had one more thing I wanted to share, but it's in the other room, so if you could continue talking, Ariel, until I get back.
Okay.
I got to run and get this paper.
The one thing that I wanted to comment on from earlier in the talk was the definition of galactic center. I have often made the analogy that galactic center is the heart of God, which helps people, you know, when I do readings and I know that they're not as galactically educated. Those are terms that people can identify with. It's not exactly an accurate description, but Sagittarius is the center of our galaxy. And
okay, I'm back.
I'm just explaining what galactic center means, because you and I are so familiar with it, it doesn't seem to need explanation, but I think possibly it does. And one interesting thing, there are several black holes in our galaxy. Almost every single constellation has one, I think, except maybe, you know, Virgo or I used to have it memorized. But I do know that of all the through all the signs of the zodiac, all the constellations, there's one or two black holes in this one, and maybe one in this one, maybe three in this one. In Sagittarius, there are six black holes. And it's kind of the center of the whole galaxy. So when we say galactic center, that's really what it is. But any energy that comes from galactic center is, I think, and just, you know, tell me if I'm incorrect, Lavendart, that of all the galactic degrees through all the signs, that 26 Sag is a little bit stronger because it's,
oh, it's
from the center?
Yes, it's the one out of 360 degrees. It is the one that is like the mothership. It's the one that transfers all the frequencies and all the light energies to all the other galactic experiments on the planet. It's like the motherboard.
The main terminal, and all the other computers are networked to it. So what affects 26 Sag affects everything.
Right.
So you can keep that in mind when you're looking at charts, tracking astrological information, transit information, like the moon was just at 26 Sag, the new moon was in Sagittarius at galactic degree. As the sun is now, it's just now entered, it's at 25, so for the next 2 days, the sun will be at galactic degree, and I think that's a good time to pay extra attention to people you meet, events that occur, not only in your personal life, but on a global scale. So do we have any questions or comments from anybody?
If it's okay, I'd like to comment on a couple of things.
Sure.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, this is Amy Caruth, and Lavendar knows me. if you remember what had happened between us and that session for a couple of minutes, one of the things that I find about people, and maybe it relates pretty well, I think, here to the veils, is that one of the things that happens is that when people are locked in fear, they can't accept new information easily and effortlessly. And as a hands-on practitioner, I had learned something several years ago from a man who was also an attorney here in the United States, but had trained with medicine people. And it had to do with essentially unlocking the fear base that is held in the structure physiologically. And when people have had this work, and a friend of mine has developed it so that it can be done remotely as well, when people have had this work, I see them being able to make the leaps that they had previously been unable to make because they were locked in a baseline that kept them in a bondage to fear.
Mm-hmm.
From the standpoint of where I'm coming from, okay, the essential work that it is that I do opens up information. And when somebody can't handle it, and I always look for this, and what I found about, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, is that the initial point about releasing the fear bondage from the body had to be done first. When I had originally taken this training 21 years ago, and I hear light and sound when I touch people, when I had taken the original training, my teacher had at that point in time taught over 1,500 people globally, and there was no one that remembered it. One of the things that I'm finding is for the past six, seven years, since I've been doing this additional piece of work, is that people, both the work that it is that I do has been reduced in time hugely, and the people that I'm working with or the people that I'm around are much more open to asking the questions and then being more present with the information that's available to them. So one of the things that I would say around the eight veils here is looking at the physiology of the species and unlocking it from the slavery aspect of fear first would allow an awful lot more to happen.
Absolutely. And I've experienced your work, so, you know, I do honor that, you know, what you do, Amy. I experienced it years and years ago, and it still resonates with me.
Well, there's a huge difference when somebody is so locked in fear, and the physiology that I see change here, and it's consistent. Just for instance, and this is going onto my website here shortly, I literally had a woman with a 59-degree scoliosis. It was a double curve. And in an hour and a half, she's straight. She's fine. She's tall. She's changed her life around completely in an hour and a half and become stable, and it's been 2 years now.
Wow.
So unlocking the physiology is really critical to somebody's emotional and spiritual path. And as long as, and I used to work up on a ranch, so you know, or my parents had had a kennel. When we're dealing with any animal, any life form at all, if it's locked in fear, it's going to snap at you. And when you can allow it, when it allows itself to move out of the fear base, then there's all kinds of other potential there. But first, it's the fear base.
Right, well, you have to unwrap it before you know what you've got.
Yeah.
You know, if the fear is covering up, they do have this the soul evolution and can be capable of existing on higher levels, but yet the fear is like an anchor that's holding them down not only in their frequency, but physically.
Oh, yes, sure.
Like,
yes,
it's like gravity.
Yeah.
It's like having gravity be stronger for you than the next person. And you
right.
get that off.
Well, that's pretty literally true, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. I can
and fear is also an excuse. People know that they can use fear as an excuse not to go anywhere.
Well, that's true, too. But pretty typically, I find that once the tailbone is shifted, then
yeah.
everything else opens up.
Right, right.
So it's like moving the rock that's been sitting on your head. And when you take a look at the physiology, the spinal column and the alignment of the chakra systems and the absorption of light, and whether that is accepted or not, you know, we're all beings of light. And if the physiology simply doesn't accept it because it's not structurally able to handle it, it's like an operating system for a computer. If there's a glitch in the operating system, there's no way the computer is going to be able to handle the information that comes into it.
That's right.
So that's just an observation that I've had from, you know, the work that it is that I do.
So it comes down to a causal level. Are they behind a lower numbered veil due to, you know, A, B, C, or all of the above? And unless all of those are reduced or removed.
Oh, of course.
You're still dealing with someone who's, in essence.
Well, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. And you know, the potential is opened up. So that then if they're going to be working on the other issues or whatever else it is that's there, then there's more potential to be available to the information.
And do you think that the person would have to be willing?
Well, yes, of course. I never override anyone's consciousness. So the person that would come or express interest, and to be perfectly honest, I just put it up as before I'm going to work on you, this is what's going to have to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a condition. Because I don't want, it's not that it's a huge amount of money that I'm charging. I'm certainly not. But to make it beneficial so that they're not going to lose the information and to not, to be perfectly honest, waste my time on somebody that really and truly doesn't want to change. This
right.
is now a precursor.
Right. It has to be some kind of partnership. You can't just have someone lay back and say, do me, and then walk
out. I very seldom go outside and grab people off the sidewalk and throw them at my table.
Amy, there's no way I was saying that. But there are people who they're attracted for some reason. I want some of that. But they don't really, they think that you can do all the work. They have to do some of the work themselves. They have to,
of course,
a little corner of the Band-Aid so you can start pulling it off.
Well, one of the things that I really love about the work that it is that I do is that I don't have to do it all.
Right.
I send people out after I'm done, and I only need to see somebody twice. So, from that standpoint, go now, grow elsewhere, find another teacher, be good over there,
Right.
I know where my fallback positions are,
mm-hmm.
and I'm pretty clear about it, actually.
Well, that's wonderful. Amy, where are you located?
Well, right now I'm in the tri-state New York, New Jersey, PA area. I just came out of Massachusetts. And I'm actually, one of the things that I have just been recently invited to do is speak at the National Dowsers Convention. And the Dowsers, I know the past president and what he was saying, and I will key him in, he and his wife, into this conversation, is that the Dowsers are probably some of the most astute people that are out there. And they've been monitored and audited, I guess, by some of the people that teach remote viewing. And these people are just wide open for virtually everything. I really enjoy them. They're a blast.
I have one friend in particular who has elevated, mastered beyond the art form of dowsing, and it's really phenomenal.
Uh-huh.
It's really phenomenal.
They're fun people.
Over the years. Again, though, as this kind of comes back full circle, it's about discernment because there are people that do have a lot of talents, gifts, blessings, powers, if you will, abilities, and you have to know that not everything plays.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because you can doesn't mean you should, and I don't know anybody like that, but I know there are people that I have come across them in the past.
As have I. And they're no longer in the field because of that.
Right. Right. Well, you can't stay afloat too long when you don't have any oars.
Oh, when you cross the wrong people.
Right. Cross the wrong people. I'm going to let you take the point right now while I switch phones. Lavender.
Okay, I just found this paper that I had printed out. This was, most of you probably don't know that I worked with Dennis Weaver, the actor, for about 4 years. And one of the last phone conversations I had with him before he died, he called me because I had faxed this to him for him to read, and he called me and thanked me for it, and we had a long conversation about what I'm going to read now, and it's called... And it's written by Gerald Celente, who has the Trans Research Institute. And for a lot of you who don't know about this man, he's like brilliant. He looks ahead in time and can tell you just about what's happening in the world at any given moment, years in advance. And he wrote something called A Recipe for Disaster from the Status Quo Cookbook, and it's called Middle Muddle. Ingredients: 6 red herring, 1 gallon fudge, 1 trial balloon, 1 bottle liquid smoke, 1 tablespoon political solution, wishful thinking according to taste, mirrors, basket of statistics, 6 to 12 experts, silver spoons, rose-colored glasses, place ingredients in basket, sprinkle with political solution, have experts stir with silver spoons, cook over moderate heat, observe through rose-colored glasses until smoke rises. Reflect smoke in mirrors, televised, served to public, feed millions. People were sensing loss, pain, and uncertainty. middle muddle magic was losing its potency, yet even as the public expressed its distrust, it could not see through the smokescreen. All that could be seen was that actions taken by experts did not produce the desired results. These experts were no longer in control. Actually, they had never been in control, but the economic and political situation prior to the 90s had fostered that illusion. As long as people prospered and felt optimistic about the future, there was no pressing need to try to see through the smokescreen. The nation was sleepwalking into the future.
Wow, that ought to be out there.
I know. It's good, isn't it?
That's good.
Awesome.
I especially like the part about reflect smoke and mirrors, televised, serve to public, feed millions.
Really? Yeah.
That got me.
Boy, that's it. That's impressive. Do you have the ability to email that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I have
I would love that.
Okay. I can, Amy. Let me make a note here. Send Amy middle muddle.
Thank you.
Okay. And anyone else on the call, if you want me to send it, just unmute yourself and tell me, and I'll write your name down. So does anyone else have anything to say? Joanne,
yes.
Are you still on from Las Cruces? Did she leave us?
I was going to ask if you could please send that to me in Long Beach, too.
Okay. Alicia? Okay, got it.
Yes, please.
Also to me, please.
Who is this?
This is Setup.
Oh, Setup
Mason.
Okay.
Hi.
Okay, got it. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Why don't we post this on the forum and the website as well?
You want to?
Sure. I can put it in the Vault of Knowledge on our website, which
right.
I'm sure you all know is starseedhotline.com. And I can also put it on the blog on our forum, which is starseedhotline.ning.com.
Okay.
And as always, if anyone has any personal topics that they'd like to discuss, we ask you to call either our Lavendar or Ariel, and we'll set that up for you. Do we have any other questions on these topics?
I have a question regarding the 25, 26, and 27 degree Sagittarius.
Okay.
When the sun is in this position, if you have any of those aspects in your chart, does this act somewhat like the Pleiadian lineup as far as tuning in, asking questions, and or is it something completely different?
It's something completely different, but it's on the same channel of activation because, oops, I just dropped the phone. Whenever galactic center gets activated and you have within your chart these aspects, it's like a boomerang. It's like a boomerang. Once it hits, it keeps bouncing. It bounces all, you know, like 26 Sag activates all 26 degrees and all signs. 26 Aries, 26 Taurus. I mean, they all get activated.
Is that true of all of the other signs or not, or it's just true of Sagittarius?
When galactic center gets activated, it activates the other 11 automatically.
I see.
I just pictured a big galactic pinball machine with
yeah,
balls going like boing, 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 boing,
there
boing.
That's kind of what I was seeing, too.
Yeah.
Bam.
Exactly right.
And then on 27, it just hits tilt before it leaves. It just kind of leaves you shaking.
Yeah. You know, think about all the people that have those aspects in their charts. Then think about the 33 gem PowerPoints on the planet, all the vortexes. I mean, you talk about Christmas. It's like all the lights are going on.
Oh, wow. Lit up for miles and miles.
Right. And can you imagine what's going to happen on December 21st, 2012?
Cute.
Yeah.
Well, how did so? You know what? We have the solstice coming up this year, right after the sun is at galactic degree in Sagittarius.
That's right.
Do those interact?
Absolutely.
How so?
It's like a dimensional window that closes and opens and then just kind of go. I don't know how to explain. It's like the first day of winter. It's when the earth gets very quiet in its seeding mechanism. I mean, it's like everything is the sap has, you know, withdrawn, and the leaves are gone and the flowers are gone, and it's a quiet time, okay? But in that quiet, in the calmness and stillness of the quietness of non-creativity as in nature, okay, there is this other energy that's prevailing, and it's silent, and it brings a peace and a calming, you know, to the planet. It's a you know, in spring the sap rises and the whole planet sings, and the 33 gem PowerPoints, they really go into the up spiral. Well, December 21st is when it all goes in the down spiral for a period of time, so that it can go to regeneration later.
It's the exhale as opposed to the inhale.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And it's preceded by a burst of energy from galactic center.
That's right.
That is possibly a seed type energy.
Mm-hmm.
That emerges then in the spring.
Right.
So it's a tracking of several months more than just today and tomorrow.
Right.
And the next day.
Yeah. But the four seasons, they all have an intricate spin with the planet. And, you know, it's all tied in together, the spring and the summer and the fall and the winter. Those are the four axis of the creative spin on the planet. And it just so happens that December 21st does happen right after the galactic center is activated.
It's like the Alpha and Omega.
Absolutely.
Well, do we have any other questions before we say goodnight?
So we'll send everyone an email when we start up after the first of the year. I'm really not sure of the date yet, but we will start the new year with some brand new information, and by then we'll probably have our blog radio show put together, and Amy, you may want to come on the radio show when we start it on blog talk.
I'd love that.
Yeah, okay. So,
that'll be wonderful.
Okay, so everyone, you have a great, great holiday, and thank you so much for being on our conference call, and I will be sending out to Amy, Alicia, and Sarah this thing I read called Metal Muddle, and if anyone else...
I can't wait.
Yeah, and if anyone else wants it, well, you have my email. You can just send me an email, and I'll send it to you. And for those that didn't get the name, it's Don Harkin, Slavery in the Eight Veils. You can type it in on Google and find it and download it. And I think it will really, you know, print it out and just have it occasionally, because it helps you kind of understand the people that are around you that are looking at you with blank faces.
Really.
So with that, I'm going to say goodnight, and I'm going to go in now, and I'm going to send the emails, okay? I'll send one to you, Ariel, okay, so you can put it up
on
the site.
That will be great. This is Ariel, and I want to wish everybody a joyous holiday, and we will talk to you next year.
Okay, bye-bye.
And
thank you.